The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Don't just think about it. With the partner, it's really smarter. Do it in the water, it's where you opt to. Do it on the weekend, it's not fatiguing. Do it while you're grooving, it'll keep you moving. But don't just think about it.
To another edition of Thunderdome!
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 517 for the week of July 1st, 2024. I am Mixed Snack Contents Analyzer David T. Cole, and I'm here with Superior Smarty, Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, thank God, eh?
And American Company logo with a maple leaf on it, Tara Ariano.
Oh, yeah, there it is, right in the middle of the golden arches. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for a holiday week. This is coming to you right in between your co-hosts' national holidays. Of course, the 4th of July, the day after this episode drops, but also July 1st, aka Canada Day. And It is in honor of the latter that we are bringing you this extremely special Thunderdome, the All-Canada Thunderdome. Now, you may think Canadians are too polite to fight in a Thunderdome. I mean, I guess we'll find out. We have each brought 9 Canadian characters, figures from television. We will explain who they are for anyone who doesn't know, and we're gonna put them in fights to the death and determine who is the ultimate Canadian fighter. It's extremely serious. All of our picks have the force of law.
27 Canadian TV figures will enter. Only one will leave.
That's right.
We think. Mm-hmm. But there are some that were not able to join us today. We're not in contention. Wolverine and Deadpool, both Canadian, are busy promoting their movie, which is great and very convenient because they cannot be killed and therefore make this Canadian Thunderdome a real farce. And the third person that could not be here is the Bits and Bytes snack guy from the 80s ad, because he'd win by lulling all contestants into a deep, deep sleep, as demonstrated here.
Hi. Me again with my Bits and Bytes. Sticking my hand in the bag and coming up with a different handful. Well, what do we got here?
Ew.
3 cheese bits, 4 spiced rings, and 2 pretzel sticks. Delicious. Next handful, whole new ballgame. You can't get bored eating Bits and Bytes snacks, cause your mouth never knows till it's all over. Bits and Bytes by Christie. Every handful is different. Yeah.
Sarah's already mortified.
There's some meaningful consent problems with this advertisement that make me very glad we're not contemplating it today.
That is the Bits and Bytes guy from the 80s, who is 80% Will Forte, as I listen to it. All right, so those are the 3 that will not be here, and you'll discover who will be here as we go through things match by match. There'll be 3 rounds. We're going to have the round of 27, round of nine, and then the round of three, and then one will stand. So, shall we get into it?
Oh, let's do
it. Yes.
Let's go. It is round one, match one. I have randomized everybody's entries. So, you're going to learn a lot about Canadian marginalia today, I think, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Our first one is from an advertisement. It is my entry. It is for a company called Canadian Tire, which is sort of, boy, it's really hard to explain it, but it's a jack of all trades, mostly automotive, but then everything else you might need in a small isolated town sort of store.
Mm-hmm.
Hardware, but also some clothes and, mm-hmm. you know, garden stuff. It's just a weird mishmash of stuff, and it's a Canadian institution.
Yep.
Back in the 80s, they ran this ad, which features a boy nobody wants to pick on their hockey team. So we're talking Albert.
Steve! Fred! John, come on! Fred! Mario! Tommy! Mike! Patrick, come on! Scott! Wait a minute, I got Johnny! Come on!
Guess that leaves Albert.
Hey, he's your kid, brother. You take him.
We're gonna get him this time.
Come on, Albert.
At Canadian Tire, we carry the best names in hockey. Bauer, Cooper, CCM, Jaffa, and Coho. But good equipment is only a beginning. How far you go depends on you.
I sure wish we had a guy like Albert.
Yeah.
Albert made it to the NHL!
Yeah. There was a great comment on YouTube or somewhere else where I was trying to hunt down this clip, which is when this started playing as an advertisement at a Maple Leafs game, the Maple Leafs are doing so bad that the crowd just started cheering Albert, Albert whenever their team scored.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. So our first person in the Thunderdome is Albert.
Okay.
Our second fighter, round one, match one, is Caillou, Sarah. Caillou, please explain.
Caillou is, and I think it's not close, the most despised figure in children's television,
correct,
like globally. Mm-hmm. I have never heard a parent or caregiver say that they could even tolerate Caillou, much less that they enjoyed Caillou.
No.
There was a no Caillou policy in my brother and sister-in-law's household, with good reason. I have a clip. Can we please hear it?
Mommy! Mommy!
What is it, Caillou?
Rosie is wearing my teddy shirt. It's not too small for me. It's mine!
I want to kill that little puke. And if you go on YouTube looking for, I forget what my search term even was, I think something very broad like Caillou sucks. It was mm-hmm. like five screens of supercuts of Caillou, things titled Caillou being a bitch, Caillou being a brat nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why I hate Caillou and you should too. Caillou is the worst thing ever drawn. I mean, it is really, there's like a whole cottage industry of Caillou loathing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm completely behind it. I do feel that it is possible for Caillou to annoy opponents to death. I guess we'll find out.
We will. Our third combatant in this round, Tara, is the Friendly Giant.
Okay, the Friendly Giant is the titular star of his own show that, when I was a kid, used to come on an hour before Sesame Street on CBC. It was Friendly Giant, then Mr. Dress-Up, then Sesame Street. And the Friendly Giant lives in a castle. He's a giant. He's friendly. He lives with Casey, who's a little boy puppet, and Finnegan, who is a dog, if I recall correctly. And he plays the recorder, and he's got a bowl cut, and he kind of looks like the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk, the Looney Tunes, or the Disney cartoon. But, you know, he's not trying to kill Mickey Mouse. He's just a very nice guy who is tall.
And there is the first Canada Thunderdome lineup. Round one, match one. Albert, Caillou, and the Friendly Giant. We'll take turns going first. Tara, you will go first here.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one because the friendly giant is a giant. Mm. He's going to really have to stoop to even be inside Thunderdome. Mm. I feel like he's too tall and he's too friendly to smash his way through.
Right.
Or just stand straight up and like pull it out of the ground. He's friendly. He respects the rules of the game. He's going to try to work within them, but he's all, you know, he's hunched over.
Right.
So he's at kind of a disadvantage. He's not so friendly that he's not going to just splat Caillou down with the palm of his hand, because even the friendly giant hates Caillou. Everybody does. Literally everyone in the universe. Mm-hmm. So that leaves friendly giant versus Albert. And I think Albert, with those skates, I mean, he's going to be slashing at the friendly giant's ankles while he's going after Caillou. And I think the friendly giant is too friendly to try to cut short the career of a promising NHL prospect. So I think that Albert is going to come out ahead.
Right,
Dave.
Right. So I get it. Friendly giant is in the Thunderdome, like almost taking up the whole Thunderdome, all hunched over. He's having a hard time. Best he could do is sort of like rotate in the Thunderdome as sort of like a beachhead gun or something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a lot of mobility. I think even maybe by mistake, he kills Caillou. But I do agree that Caillou is universally hated. I never heard Caillou before today, but I've always known that there is nobody on Earth that enjoys it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I think, going to be a bit of a shame that we lose Caillou, because I feel like it could be one of those things like aliens invading Earth, something that will like unify humanity. We're losing one of those things today.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah.
Albert, most of the commercial, we see him as a kid, but then, of course, then at the end, he is an NHL superstar wearing his jersey with his first name on it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Albert. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, if he has skates, hockey stick, you know, if that's his, what he's got with him, because that's his whole shtick. And the Giants there, he could just like stick one of those skates up the Giants rectum, and then that's his game over. He's going to be too much pain to really do anything after that. I'm thinking Ant-Man and Thanos kind of strategy here.
Yeah.
Where the rectum is big enough to stick a skate in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, once you get a skate in the rectum, guys, it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah, I just don't think the friendly giant is motivated to fight that hard because he's nice. Sarah.
Here's what I think happens. I think that Caillou's whining and crying bursts the eardrums of the friendly giant, who, I mean, also hates Caillou, but has a brand to maintain. Once his eardrums burst, he finds himself very woozy and he collapses to the ground with a brain bleed. Albert is a hockey player, quite a bit more nimble than this 4-year-old fuckwad, whom he positions in the shadow of the falling friendly giant, who, as he is dying, hits the ground and flattens Caillou into a thin, pasty, whiny film.
Sure.
So Albert prevails. I agree. Didn't actually see this coming, but now that I'm talking it through, this is the only way.
Okay. I do want to say, just for future rounds that Albert's in, I also think because of all the neglect and teasing that he experienced as a child, he does have sort of this malicious eye of the tiger in the future. Like, we only see him
at the end
of the commercial as an NHL player with a crowd cheering. You don't even see his face. But I got to feel like this guy's pissed, and that's what drives him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, concur.
All right, it's time for match two. Do it. Our first match two contestant is...
All is quiet. Or is it? The North American house hippo is found throughout Canada and the eastern United States. House hippos are very timid creatures and are rarely seen. But they will defend their territory if provoked. They come out at night to search for food, water, and materials for their nests. The favorite foods of the house hippo are chips, raisins, and the crumbs from peanut butter on toast. They build their nests in bedroom closets, using lost mittens, dryer lint, and bits of string. The nests have to be very soft and warm. House hippos sleep about 16 hours a day.
That looked really... real, but you knew it couldn't be true, didn't you? That's why it's good to think about what you're watching on TV and ask questions, kind of like you just did.
It is the North American House Hippo, and that's the ad you heard about the fictional character of the House Hippo that everybody just wishes was an actual thing.
It's so cute.
Uh-huh, so cute.
Smaller than a cat.
Yes.
Leaving peanut butter tracks as he steps across the toast into the kitchen.
Yeah, he's about the size of a hamster, I would say.
Yeah, super adorable. He's in his little watering bowl having a good old hippo time. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, you know, don't believe what you are told in television. So that is number one for round one, match two. Our second entry is Shelley Tambo from Northern Exposure.
Yes, Shelley Tambo, played by Cynthia Geary. She is the young wife of Holling Vancouver. She comes from Saskatchewan. She's a former, I believe they meet in a, Maurice is judging a beauty contest that she is in. So initially she's with him and then she ends up with Holling and it causes a lot of friction between the two lifelong friends. But she's just sort of cute little cutie, bringing people their food at Holling's bar and wearing short skirts and having bangs and coming from Saskatchewan.
All right. And our third combatant in this round is somebody that you've heard on this podcast many times.
So you gentlemen want the secret of how Cadbury gets the soft, creamy caramel inside the chocolatey pockets of the Caramilk bar?
Yes. We know you have it. And my people are prepared to pay 50 million.
Not enough.
75 million for the caramel secret.
Not enough.
100 million. Tops.
Sorry.
I'm willing to pay anything.
Anything?
It's the Cadbury Caramel Devil, my submission. I mean, what can he say? He's the devil from the commercial for the Cadbury Caramel Bar.
Right. I think you can say he's dressed like he's going to the disco in 1974.
Sure.
He's like got a black and red disco suit on. It's kind of great.
So yeah, he's willing to tell you the secret of Caramilk, but it will cost you, you know, it's implied, your soul.
All right. So there we have it. Round one, match two, the North American House Hippo versus Shelley Tambo from Northern Exposure versus the Cadbury Caramilk Devil.
Yeah.
Do you think the Cadbury Caramilk Devil is the devil? I think I mean, that's something we could talk about.
Yeah, sure.
Or is it a devil, lowercase d? Right. And here's where I vocally regret not doing some paranormal research on what is the kind of agreed upon skill set, power pack of a lowercase d devil. This is impossible, basically. I mean, I thought I was like, all right, here's the house hippo. All right, yes, little and cute, but still, they do make a point of showing it, like, yawning and also yelling. They do have those big teeth, and they can open those jaws really wide, and someone's Achilles tendon could get real fucked up by little house hippo. And then enter Shelley, who I think is able to withstand a lot of bullshit if she was with Maurice for any length of time. And also, you know, prairie girls are tough.
And also Maurice's toxic masculinity, just like Satan.
Okay. Great point.
All right.
Yeah. And I have always respected her willingness to be miniskirt forward, even in Alaska. Like, she'd have, you know, L.L. Bean boots up to mid-thigh, but she was still rocking a miniskirt.
Yeah.
I always supported her. And I do the same. But the thing is, a Cadbury Devil is, like, supernatural and hoarding the secrets to candy. How does any of this translate to Thunderdome?
Yeah.
Is the question. I think Shelley's out, but I also think that the Cadbury Devil perhaps relies on misunderstandings about the Satan adjacent to intimidate opponents. The House Hippo is not human, does not watch television or consume pop culture, and does not care. The House Hippo is just going to chomp on the devil's Achilles and knock him down and then snack on him. Someone else make an argument against that, and I will happily hear it, but this is how I see it going, is Hippo wins.
Okay.
Talk me out of it.
The Cadbury campaign that the devil was a part of, we never see the devil again, but there's all these fantastical scenarios in which Caramel Secret is being nearly brought out, but never is, because you never can know, and one of them is like aliens abducting people and stuff like that, so it gets crazy. So I think, because of how grandiose the campaign is, that this is probably the devil. I think this is Satan here. And Satan is just spending his time guarding the Caramel Secret. He knows it. he may not be responsible directly for Caramilk, but he knows this is one of the great questions humanity wants answered. How do they get the caramel into the middle of a Caramilk bar? So then he can leverage that knowledge to gain souls. And I think that's, you know, ultimately, of course, what Satan is. He's in the soul business. He's not in the chocolate business.
Yeah.
So I think this is Satan, capital S. This is the devil, capital D.
Okay. Now the question is that probative?
So...
That is the question.
I like the argument that the house hippo has relative hippo strength, and hippos are terrible, dangerous animals.
Very dangerous.
When we went on safari, that seemed to be the one that people are like, yeah, you don't go near the hippos. Like, we can get kind of near an elephant or a lion, cheetahs, baboons. Hippos?
Hippos are
no.
not fucking having it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
House hippo, of course, is much smaller. So it's a challenge for a house hippo, I think, to take on the Prince of Darkness. Shelley Tambo, I think, wouldn't give a shit about, or would give less of a shit that she's actually staring down Satan, because she's seen the qualities of Satan, of his toxic masculinity in so many people up in Alaska already. So the question is, if it came down to a fist fight between Shelley and the Cadbury Caramilk Devil, does the devil have any inherent physical advantages? Can he summon magic that just instantaneously blows her up or something like that? We don't see that in the commercial. This seems to be a person that is dealing with bargains, Faustian situations, and trickery. So I think those are his weapons. So I think Tambo Caramel Devil isn't as mismatched as you may have presented it in your argument, Sarah, the way I see it. Tara, where are you going here?
Okay, here's what's going to happen. Shelley is going to see the North American house hippo. She's going to pick it up. She's going to start cooing. She's going to pet it. She's going to let it walk all over her chest and her shoulders. She is out. She is out of commission because this thing is so cute and all she wants to do is play with it. Okay. So she is holding the house hippo when the literal actual devil, who for whatever reason is mostly concerned about Caramilk.
Yep.
He just zaps them both with devil powers, or he runs them through with his pitchfork or whatever. He is going to just take them out in one fell swoop because Shelley cannot resist the cuteness of the house hippo. No one possibly could. It would be impossible.
I thought you were going with some sort of hippo familiar situation where she befriends the house hippo and they team up to take on the devil with both not giving a shitness and ankle biting power.
Mm-hmm.
But if the hippo could also then be a small d devil of his own.
What?
Explain.
He doesn't have to be her familiar. He could also be the devil's familiar.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yes.
Hippie Beelzebub.
If Shelley picks him and ingratiates herself to the house hippo, that the house hippo, you know, it is a pet after all, and might therefore take her side on it. Now, whether that means if she and the hippo can take on the devil and defeat them with their combined powers, do they move ahead as a team? Or does Shelley then after that put the hippo on the floor and sit on it?
That's an interesting possibility.
I also have a question.
Yeah.
Tara, you're saying the devil wins.
Yeah.
I said hippo wins. Dave, did you say Tambo wins?
I didn't say, because I was curious what Tara was going to bring up. I am putting in my scenario that the hippo becomes an ally to Shelley Tambo because of her affection for it.
Okay.
And either they move ahead as a unit, which that is a little dicey with Thunderdome rules.
Yeah.
Or she wins because then after that, she takes advantage of her relationship and snaps his neck.
All right. I'm changing my story to the following. The devil can use magic, but the devil can also have magic used against him, which is what Tambo is going to do using a recipe that she heard from Marilyn involving house hippo poop and a magic circle.
I think we need to put a vote on this, see where we lie. So Sarah, who are you saying?
Hippo.
Okay, so you're saying it's a team up.
The pair,
and they're gonna move on. Tara, devil?
I say devil.
I'm going to go with the team up as well. I can't get out of my head. I like it. I think maybe she can hide the house hippo in her big sweaters in between rounds.
Yeah.
And then pull it
out. I have another question, though. Do they have to stay a team?
I guess we'll find out. I mean, who knows what's going to happen to Thunderdome, right?
An hour later, we're still talking about the fucking hippo.
Sorry. Do it, do it, do it. This is match three. Our first combatant in match three is from a public service announcement in Canada. He is Astar the robot, and he is a spokes robot for the War Amps of Canada, I think is the organization. And I don't even know if they do this anymore, but the reason why everybody knows about the War Amps of Canada, besides their this crazy commercial, is that back in the day, you would give a donation to the War Amps, and in return, they would send you a key fob with a serial number on it that you put in your keychain. If it was ever lost, there's an agreement with Canada Post that you can just stick those keys in a mailbox, and then because of their central registry, they would come back to you. So sort of like Apple tags before, or Apple AirTags before Apple AirTags, just for your keys and very slow.
They still do it according to the internet.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents always had them. You spend $5. If you lose your key, you're going to get it back. Good deal. Smart thing. So Astar the robot was a be careful how you play because you might amputate something.
You might. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they show this robot doing sort of parkour in this futuristic, you know, gears and, you know, dangerous stuff flying all around. And he's doing great. He's just like just slipping in between things and flying out of stuff until the very end where his arm gets clipped.
I am Astar, a robot. I can put my arm back on. You can't. So play safe.
Yeah.
So that's Astar the robot.
Acted by a robot too, I see.
Our next combatant is Megan Draper, Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
Chomp.
Megan Draper, played by Jessica Paré. I don't know if Megan would consider herself more of a Canadian than a Quebecoise. But she is the Sterling Cooper Draper Price assistant slash secretary turned one of Don's several wives for a while. She's the one who everyone speculated that she might get murdered because there was the episode where she was wearing the Sharon Tate star t-shirt. She was fine other than, you know, probably traumatized from being married to Don, which is not a good time. And sang Zooby Zooby Zoo very memorably and cringefully.
Joining Astar and Megan is Joey Jeremiah Degrassi.
Oh, boy. I don't really think that this needs much explanation. Joey Jeremiah in his little hat started out in Kids of Degrassi Street, went all the way through. I mean, there's like a couple generations of Degrassi now that I don't know anything about, but I assume he is still like extant in the universe. And Pat Mastroianni once left a comment or sent me an email saying nice things about something that I'd written about Degrassi. So he's a good egg in my book, or is bored and needs a library card. Could be both, I suppose. How much of a fighter is he? I guess we're going to find out.
All right. So there it is. Astar the robot versus Megan Draper versus Joey Jeremiah. I have to go first. Part of the picture I didn't get from your talk about Joey Jeremiah, like how much of a badass is or isn't he in the show?
Yeah. I would say not really a badass. I would say he's like positioned as trifler with a good heart, like always has sort of schemes, is a horn dog, but is basically good. He's just chaotic.
Okay.
Good.
This is really tough because these are three, I think, generally weak contestants to be in the Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. Astar the robot, I think, is a child robot.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly presents that way.
Yeah.
Also, you know, you're thinking, oh, he's a robot. He's metal. His arms come off very easy. And the way he reattaches them seems to me like they might be held together with a simple fridge magnet.
Yes.
So I think you could probably pull them apart relatively easily. So I think when you hear robot, you think, oh, well, case closed. But Astar the robot, I think, generally speaking, is a weak robot. Mm-hmm. And he has a mind of a child, too.
Right.
He's jumping around all this shit, these blades and cyberpunk shit. Like, come on, guy, have a little sense. Megan Draper, she's been through a lot, though. So experience counts for something here,
yeah.
I would say, is probably her main advantage. And then Joey Jeremiah just sounds like a good guy. Maybe he's got a boner for Megan Draper if he's a horn dog, and that's going to sort of set him aside. So
for
of these three, which I think, again, are weak contestants and doomed to immediate failure in round two, I'm going to guess, I'm going to put my vote behind Megan Draper.
Wow.
Tara.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Megan is that 1 year of marriage to Don is like 9 years of marriage to any other man. It's like the presidency. It's going to age you fast.
Right. Also, her song. If she starts singing it in the Thunderdome, people are like, oh my God, and they might just kill themselves.
That's right. She's come out of that. She's just ravaged. I mean, you know, you said weak. I think that's absolutely right. She's been through it. She has no fight left in her. She's done. I don't think Megan is really a combatant worth considering, honestly. She's really skinny. I don't think she has a lot of power either or stamina. I mean, I assume she smokes. It's been a while since I watched the show, but, you know, they all did. So she hasn't got a lot of cardio strength either. So it comes down to Astar versus Joey. Let's say the two of them just, you know, kind of link arms and kick her and she's down and stays down. Her teeth dig in the ground. She's stuck. That's it for Megan.
Oh, boy.
So then, wow. I mean, Joey versus Astar, like... Yeah, I mean, Sarah makes a good point that he's kind of a schemer, but he's not tough and he doesn't really get into any serious problem. He's more like just a sort of lovable rogue type as opposed to like a bad kid, you know?
Yeah.
But I still think the con energy that he has on like, you know, low-key kid con level, I think he is motivated to stay alive. And like Dave said, I think he just rips Astar limb from limb. If Megan's not, if she's trying to get up, he's using those limbs to beat her back down. Joey and his little pork pie hat walk out of here, I think. Probably not for long, as Dave said, but I think Joey takes it. Sarah.
Okay.
I point you to a couple of different instances where Don was, you know, being Don. In Megan's direction, she was like, no, fuck you. The sherbet incident. She knew he didn't want the song. She sang it anyway.
Yeah.
She also has very prominent teeth that could be used for good or evil.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think happens. She's not the only one in this bunch with an earwig song. Once she realizes that everybody wants something they'll never give up is going to be in her brain grapes for like 2 weeks minimum. She's going to rip Astar's weakly attached arm off and beat Joey Jeremiah to death with it.
Mm.
I think she's tougher than you're giving her credit for, and she was raised by an absolute stone battle axe. Let's not forget Mrs. Coldwater at night. So I agree with Dave. Different reasons, same outcome. Megan Draper. Chomp okay. Noise.
All right, Megan Draper proceeds. Do it, do it, do it. Match 4, first combatant, Allison Hendricks, Orphan Black.
Yes, like all of the clones, she is played by Tatiana Maslany. Allison is the one who lives in the suburbs, but she is type A. She's like in the top 1% of the 1% of type A's. She solves a lot of problems that the clones experience with ingenuity and a low-key, just natural criminal mind. I think we all remember the scene of her jumping on the bed, I believe with a bunch of cash, with her husband. You know, somewhere deep inside her, there's future She-Hulk energy. That doesn't come into play here, but we all know it's true. So that's Allison.
Also, speaking of deep inside, doesn't she also have a body in her garage?
That sounds right.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
That's her. That's Allison.
Uh-huh.
Okay, second combatant is Hobo from The Littlest Hobo. He's a German Shepherd. He's really super fucking smart, and he solves problems. Is he a good fighter? Maybe not. I guess we'll find out how he fares.
Those with our big tease.
Third combatant here, Pamela Baywatch Anderson, and we're hitting the first of Sarah's qualified entry. So explain what the quotations mean when we get to these sort of actors with the shows in the middle of them.
Absolutely. If in the event that I picked a Canadian actor, I went with a specific show that they are associated with, it might not be everyone's first association. It might not be everyone's favorite association, but I felt like they should be confined to a single role and have to fight with the powers and skills from that role only.
Got it.
So, ergo, Pamela Baywatch Anderson is not, I mean, was Barbed Wire a movie or a TV show? I feel like she was in some show where she was like a scantily clad PI.
Oh, that was VIP? VIP? VIPs?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
VIPs was about hockey players. I don't think she was in that. No, that was MVP. Sorry. Canadian soap about hockey players. It was actually not terrible. I recommend it. Pamela Baywatch Anderson is fighting as her Baywatch character, complete with unfortunate wedgie involving swimsuit, but also life-saving skills and extremely distracting boobs.
Okay. All right. So we've got Allison, Hobo, and Pamela Baywatch Anderson. Tara, first thoughts.
Hobo does have sharp teeth. We don't know what his background is. He might have been trained to kill, or perhaps...
I don't think it's in his nature, Tara. We've never seen anything.
That's what I'm saying. That may be deep in his background, but nothing we ever see on the show gives any indication that he's anything other than a sweet little doggy, goes from town to town, Incredible Hulk style, trying to, as Dave said, solve people's problems in various adorable doggy ways. Hobo is a sweetie. Hobo, I think, is going to find this, I'm sorry to say, very traumatic. I don't think Hobo is going to last. Allison strikes me as the kind of person who has a heart of stone. She is not going to care. She is not going to be moved by the plight of a doggy. If a dog is standing between her and continuing life on this earth or, you know, reuniting with her family, that dog's going down. I feel like Allison could kill Hobo with her bare hands and would. So that leaves Allison versus Pamela Anderson slash CJ. What's her last name? Slash CJ, whatever it is.
CJ is fine.
I
was about to say Craig. Nope. Very different show.
I think CJ might try to get the better of her. I mean, they're both also really short. So neither of them has the advantage naturally of like physicality. But really all CJ has going for her is those big boobs. And I think Allison is going to punch her way through those and strangle her with her red bathing suit and move on to the next round, because moving on and surviving is what Allison Hendricks does. Sarah.
I don't disagree with you. I think there are matchups in which CJ or Pam Anderson and her Baywatch guys could prevail, but I just don't think that against the evident sociopathy that is Allison's craft room, as canonically shown on that show, I think nobody else in this matchup has a chance. I also think it's kind of fucked up for Dave, a dog lover and vegetarian, to put Hobo in Thunderdome.
I mean, you're not wrong, but we'll get to it.
So, look, I'm calling an audible. I know everybody is supposed to be, like, dead in these matchups. Like, it's either you're dead or you move on. Someone is opening a door and letting Hobo run out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
To be adopted by a nice family and to continue his adventures in an Australian spinoff. That's all anybody wants from him. I agree with Tara. Allison Hendricks.
What was Allison's husband's name on the show?
I'll look it up.
Okay. It's like Doug or something.
Donnie.
Okay. Allison's husband on Orphan Black, Donnie, had a backbone similar to a dog that you have trained. I think Allison, having seen the great North American house hippo Shelley Tambo team up, takes charge of Hobo in her commanding style.
Oh.
She's a natural alpha in this situation. Mm-hmm. Hobo falls in line, becoming her little familiar in this battle. So I think they together destroy Pamela Baywitch.
I mean, I like that much better than Baywitch. Mine, so I accept that.
So we now have two votes for a team up.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, do you want to get in on this train, or are you happy with where you are?
I want Hobo to be let out of this situation, period. So I accept the majority's decision, but I do not agree.
All right. Doesn't matter. Outvoted.
I know.
Hobo makes it to the second round with Allison. Round one, match five. Jason Brandon Walsh Priestley.
Can I have your attention, please?
Brandon Walsh. What? He is very small, but he is very, very annoying. And people defer to his authority in situations in which they should just never, ever do this. So Jason Priestley, known Canadian, best known, I think, for being Brandon Walsh. And I think that even though he is frequently despicable in this role, he does have strange powers over other characters. We may not agree, but we must acknowledge.
Yep.
And he also has a perfectly flat shelf of hair. which mm-hmm. might be useful for some reason.
I was already thinking of that, so thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, flat hair. Big, okay. big consideration here in Canada Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our second combatant in round one, match five, is Seth Bullock from Deadwood, South Dakota Sheriff. Montana was in the play at some point in that series. Well, yeah, he's from Ontario, though, originally, and historically. So we're going to put him in the mix. He's calling you out on the thoroughfare.
Yep.
Third mm-hmm. contestant is William James T. Kirk Shatner.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus. Brutal.
Wow.
Well, as Dave noted in a previous round, I had to pick one. And, you know, Stars on Mars didn't seem like the one to pick. Or Boston Public. So the Shat, with whom I share a birthday, if not a birth year, God, his role as James T. Kirk, in which he was famous for, you know, fighting and prevailing usually against multiple alien races while wearing a lace front and a girdle often. So, and that's, you know, that's not nothing. Mm-hmm. I think once he actually had to fight using a styrofoam space rock dildo. You know, he's a captain, but he's also innovative. So we're going to see what happens.
All right, Jason, Brandon Welsh Priestley, Seth Bullock from Deadwood, and William James T. Kirk Shatner. Sarah, start us off.
Well, I don't know if anyone else is going to agree with this, but I do feel that since he is James T. Kirk, he also has access to all of the Enterprise bells, whistles, and gadgets, and it is perhaps possible for him to transport in and out of or around the Thunderdome and pop up in like different places and confuse people that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a no additional weapons policy in Thunderdome. You can only use what's on inside of the dome. But we do know that James T. Kirk has in the past used bladed bows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we have seen him use the stuff, but I don't think he could like transport in a phaser without disqualification and immediate execution. But certainly phasing around inside of the Thunderdome, I think, is in play.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually think Bullock, like, self-righteousness does not mean that you're a good fighter, and that applies to both Seth Bullock and Brandon Walsh, actually. But I think that Brandon Walsh is, like, so toxically confident that he could withstand an onslaught for a while. But he's just, I think, a little bit too small. So eventually he is going to subside in the face of Seth Bullock's superior height and self-righteousness. But I think Seth Bullock is also an overthinker. William Shatner, in his James T. Kirk guise, does not have that problem. He's just trying to get to the edge of hyperspace. If he has to fight, he's going to do that. I think it is Shatner as Kirk, because I think he's just a slightly more focused on the goal and not as, I mean, he is very full of himself, but I think in ways that are more efficacious to his victory.
Kirk is certainly a better improviser than Seth Bullock is. Seth Bullock is also prone to anger. He has anger management issues, as we know, if you've watched Deadwood. Mm. Brendan Walsh is immediately killed. He doesn't last like, I don't like, I get he's annoying. I think that actually plays into it. We're even probably going to accelerate his death faster than it would have been otherwise if we were just talking about physical skill here. Mm-hmm. So he's dead within a minute. And then Bullock versus James T. Kirk in this situation, or James T. Shatner. Yeah, Sarah, I think you're right. I think William Shatner as James T. Kirk would take this one. We haven't even talked about his ability to bounce around inside of the Thunderdome, but I just think that Seth Bullock is going to have a problem keeping it reined in. And James T. Kirk isn't such like a successful advanced planner that things won't go awry, but he is well known for adapting to the situation and changing things on the fly. Bullock, not so much in that department. So I think that gives Shatner the edge here.
Brandon / Jason Priestley is definitely the Caillou of this round. I think he immediately is
in so many ways, truly,
to everybody. I think Shatner sees him as an easy out. So Shatner finishes him, knocks him down, smashes his, you know, his shelf hair. Brandon out of commission. I mean, I take both your points. I feel like, you know, Dave already brought up Seth Bullock's anger. I think that's like his signal characteristic. Like he's the angriest man in the territory. And I think, you know, to me, that focuses him like a laser, not to mention his superior wingspan. I mean, I think he can just put out one hand. Shatner can't get anywhere near him.
Oh, but no, Shatner's got those close-quartered judo chops.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, I think Shatner probably has more to prove, and I think he does. He certainly has in many, many more episodes than Seth Bullock got, never mind how many more movies on top of that there also are after that. Only one movie for Seth Bullock. So if we were talking about Cobb, what's his name on Mandalorian?
Cobb Vanth.
Cobb Vanth. If we were talking about Cobb Vanth, different story. But he's from space. He's not from Canada. We're talking from Seth Bullock. So I'll defer to both of you. I'll agree with you that Shatner can take this one.
Well, well, welly, well, well.
Yay!
Gorgeous.
All right, we're at match six of round one. Our first contestant is somebody you've heard in this podcast recently. It is the Mosquito from the hilarious House of Frightenstein mentioned on EHG.
EEHG 302.
Thank you.
You know, some people would give their right arm to be at my birthday party tomorrow, and they're invited as long as they bring a present, like a right arm or a left arm or a right leg. Get it? That's funny. Ha ha. Lunchtime.
So if you're not on our extra, extra hot, great feed, this is the Mosquito. He is from a Canadian show called The Hilarious House of Frightenstein, sort of a rogue gallery monster show from the 70s, but it's all very kid-oriented and goofy and weird, but also like a lot of weed was being smoked in the writer's room, obviously. And the Mosquito is a green screen character that always drops down on top of a foot, tells a joke, and then stings the foot at the end of it. And that's what you hear. I don't know how big he's supposed to be, if that's because relative to the foot you see, this mosquito is probably the size of a hamster. So it's not just a mosquito. It's a pretty big mosquito if you assume the foot is to scale. Mm-hmm. Our second combatant in this round is Kiefer 24 Sutherland.
Well, look, it's Jack Bauer. I probably don't have to say more, but just in case I do, the anti-terrorist is himself kind of a terrorist. Let's hear that clip.
Russians didn't have a lot of high-tech equipment up there, so they kind of had to make do with what was around. Sort of like what I'm doing right now. You probably don't think that I could force this towel down your throat. But trust me, I can. All the way. Except I hold on to this one little bit at the end. When your stomach starts to digest it, pull it out, taking your stomach lining with it.
Jesus!
Oh, cool? So yeah, Jack Bauer. I trust I don't have to say that much more.
Our third combatant here in round one, match six, is Sarah McLachlan, as heard on the Humane Society promotions.
You know, we all know where we were the first, seventh, and 400th time we saw her sadly telling you about the plight of domestic animals while her song Angel plays in the background. Cut back to Sarah on the couch holding her, I assume, her own golden retriever looking very happy and safe. Yeah, pop star turned emotional warrior, Sarah McLachlan. Mm-hmm.
All right, so there is our matchup. The Mosquito, Kiefer 24 Sutherland, and Sarah McLachlan as portrayed in the Humane Society promotions.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Honestly, when I saw that Sarah McLachlan was in the mix before I randomized this, I saw a path for her for victory and that she could just depress everybody so much that it takes the edge off a physical advantage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer in 24 is like a monster. He would not really react to that in the way a normal human would. Mm-mm. As we just heard, he's willing to, with fiber, rip out your stomach lining slowly, painfully. And the Mosquito, while a big mosquito, I feel also would not fare very well against Kiefer Sutherland, who has been on the receiving end of pain, been on the giving end, obviously, as well. But I think it wouldn't really faze him too much to have to dispatch a gerbil-sized mosquito. Mm-hmm. Like, as a mosquito, probably that mosquito would beat up every other mosquito around, just from size alone.
Yeah.
But I think here that Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer in 24 is a clear winner for me.
Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we heard in the clip, he knows how to improvise. He can whatever is in or near Thunderdome, even if it's a handful of pebbles, he is going to use that handful of pebbles to kill you and not lose a second of sleep. I mean, even though Sarah specified this is Jack Bauer, let's not forget, Kiefer Sutherland is also the designated survivor, and that's what he's going to do. He's going to survive, designatedly, the Thunderdome.
And Sarah. Stuff you in his rabbit hole.
Yes. He's going to mutiny you on the cane something.
All right, Sarah.
Yeah, I nominated him, so I agree. But I also agree, like, if she hadn't run into the killing machine that is Jack Bauer, yeah. I also saw a path to victory for Sarah McLachlan. But we said in a previous episode about the mosquito that this is basically like a small human actor dressed in like every pipe cleaner in Ontario and mm-hmm. some old socks. Mm-hmm. So Jack Bauer is just going to take a sock off this costume, do the towel trick to Sarah McLachlan, game over. Not that he would even come to that,
mm-mm.
honestly.
No.
He'd just like take one in each hand and squeeze until they popped like grapes.
Cool. So.
God. Cool.
All right, we're getting towards the end of round one. This is match 7. Okay, our first combatant in match 7, and I have to explain this a bit because you're going to hear the audio, but just to set it up, there is a woman checking out at a retail location, mm-hmm. and she is shocked by the bargain she just got and heads out of the store like she's got to drop a deuce real fast and is running to the bathroom.
Here's your receipt. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Summer sale, up to 50% off. IKEA fits.
Very famous Canadian commercial that is the start the car lady, as you heard.
Yep.
Getting a real good deal from IKEA and
suspiciously good.
Yeah, suspiciously good.
Mm-hmm.
And getting her husband to start the car in advance so they can peel out of there before IKEA realizes what crazy prices they've been selling their merchandise for. And then, of course, her war cry there at the end as she is excited about what she just got away with. So, very famous commercial. I don't know how it's going to translate into the Thunderdome, but certainly an iconic Canadian character. Our second character is Robin Sherbaski from How I Met Your Mother.
That's right. Played by Kobe Smulders. This is the child pop star turned news anchor turned the woman Ted eventually ends up with on How I Met Your Mother.
And rounding out this match is a promotional character named Peter Puck. And Peter Puck was a character you can see on Hockey Night in Canada when the whole nation was watching hockey. And he would appear in the intermissions and teach you about playing hockey. So he was sort of like the indoctrination vehicle for young kids to learn and love and worship hockey.
The puck, that's me, must always precede the attacking players across the opponent's blue line. I can be stick-handled across, passed across, or shot across. Just as long as it's me first. If both skates of an attacking player cross the blue line before I do, that's a no-no.
So that's Peter Puck. I will say Peter Puck as a kid when he popped up when you're watching, because, you know, when you're really young, you don't really care about hockey, but the whole family is in front of the TV screen watching the hockey game. But suddenly there's a cartoon. You're so starved for something that you like that you immediately Peter Puck is your favorite thing ever. So that was mm-hmm. Peter Puck. And Peter Puck would also, they did this thing back in the day with hockey games in the intermission. They had this thing called Showdown where it was the net and they would get a couple players from each team to have this like little mini competition where they would put targets in the corners of the nets, like paper targets, and they would have to shoot the puck and how many can hit the target in 10 seconds or something like that. That was also a lot more fun than regular hockey. So you got those two things back to back. So that's why Peter Puck was a very exciting time for young Canadians. All right. Start the car, lady. Robin Sherbaski, Peter Puck is our lineup. Tara, start us off.
I mean, I, you know, all respect to Peter Puck, I'm not sure how much of a factor he's going to be in this one.
Well, let me paint you the picture of what he looks like.
Okay, you go first.
So Peter Puck is on the ice. Mm-hmm. He has eyes that sort of hover above his Puck body. Mm-hmm. And he has sort of like T-Rex hands that sort of are sometimes there. He doesn't walk or it doesn't have feet in this particular short that I watched, although in promotion materials, you do see him on his feet sometimes. Mm-hmm. So there is the question here in Thunderdome if he ever actually can even stand up.
Yeah. I mean, the picture I've just pulled up, he's standing on skates. Mm-hmm. A lot of his parts are not attached to him. I don't see a lot of advantages for Peter Puck here, especially without, you know, someone with a stick to propel him around. I'm dubious about how much independent mobility he has.
Can you imagine the team up we could have had if Peter Puck and Albert managed to be in the same round?
I was thinking it.
Yes, but that's not what happened.
Nope.
Instead, he's against Start the Car Lady and Robin. Mm. And Start the Car Lady, oh boy. I mean,
let me give you a two-word phrase.
Okay.
That maybe we can start.
Sure.
Retail Viking.
Retail Viking?
Yes.
Yeah. What I was about to say is I think she has some advantage because she has a criminal bent.
Yeah.
This is the whole point of the ad. She hasn't done anything wrong, but she thinks she did. Mm-hmm. And she is immediately springing into action to do what needs to be done to make sure she gets away with it. I think that's the energy she is bringing to the Thunderdome. She's going to kick Peter Puck straight into Robin's forehead. Robin goes down. Uh-huh. Start the Car Lady is starting the fucking car because she has won her round.
If this was 1,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
she would have been on the ship that just got to shore on the coast of England, and she's just killed the Bishop of Wessex.
Yes, of course.
That's her.
Mm-hmm.
Except now she's in a Swedish house store.
Yeah.
And she just got away with something.
And we also don't know if while she was in there shopping, she might have loaded up on Swedish meatballs. Speaking of that, she's motoring out of there, even though she has a full belly. Part of her wants to take a nap. Uh-huh. She's not taking a nap. She's taking it to the streets with her ill-gotten gains. Sarah.
Tasty, but also high protein.
That's right. True.
Sure. Sarah.
I think that Peter Puck's resilience should not be discounted. Like his use as a like weapon or tool by someone else.
Right.
Like I think that he's difficult to kill. He's like obsidian, basically. But it's not impossible. And once he's buried in someone's skull, you know, he'll I don't know what pucks eat, but it's gonna be hard for him to get any food when he's, you know, wedged into someone's cranium.
Mm.
And I think the scenario is just as my esteemed colleague Tara has described. Start the Car Lady for the win.
Agreed. Retail Viking for the win here. Round one, match eight. Our first contestant is Raymond Perry Mason 1.0 Burr. 1.0. Great. Fantastic.
He's a big guy. He is wearing a suit of the 1950s, which means that it has three times as much fucking fabric as is necessary. So he is able to use that and a tie like a goddamn pie plate. There is no law in Thunderdome, so some of his assets can't really be used. But a big part of his whole deal is 11th hour, fifth act,
right.
Hail Mary that comes through for him and saves the whole case. So can he count on that or avail himself of that energy of the universe in Thunderdome? Let us find out.
Mm-hmm.
Second combatant, Jimbo, Drag Race All-Stars.
Yes, Jimbo originally competed on Canada's Drag Race, went on to an All-Star season, and, I mean, spoiler for several years ago. One, Jimbo is trained initially as a clown, and Jimbo's signature as a drag queen is comically gigantic fake boobs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And rounding us off is from Kids in the Hall, Head Crusher.
Deity or deities, forgive this abuse of your earthbound ambassador, but my calling is very specific. I'm crushing your head, I'm crushing your head, I'm crushing your head.
So Head Crusher, he puts his little fingers up to his eyes and then crushes somebody's head from across the street in his imagination, which I think is an important point.
Yep.
Our matchup is, Sarah, you'll start us off, Raymond Perry, Mason 1.0 Burr, Jimbo, and the Head Crusher.
Well, I think the Head Crusher does not have enough actual practical head crushage on his curriculum vitae to really figure into this. I think it really is down to Raymond Perry and Jimbo. And, you know, once again, this iteration of Raymond Burr is much more a life of the mind character. He is imposing physically. He is wearing yards and yards and yards of gabardine. But I think compared to Jimbo, who has like clowning and dance training and also is probably wearing a 5-inch heel of some kind, which can be buried in the eye of any enemy, I am going to say Jimbo.
Okay. Well, the Head Crusher, even if he did have head crushing abilities, which he really doesn't, I think it's fair to say that he is not used to fighting people. This is his whole shtick. He's got a lopsided fight in his imagination. He's fighting people from across the street that don't even know their heads are being crushed.
That's right.
And when he finally meets somebody who's actually going to fight him, I believe it's the face pincher, I think, is eventually who he meets. It's the Kevin McDonald character. He's the face pincher. He's doing the same thing. He doesn't really fare too well in that meeting of the pinch crushing minds. So even if he did have some head-crushing abilities, I don't really think he's up for a fight. So yeah, it comes down to Burr and Jimbo, and I did not even think about what are they wearing when they come into there. And I think you make a good point, although there is something to be said about Raymond Burr just sitting on them, and then that's it. Like, he's basically the kingpin of the judicial system. You know, I mean, kingpin as in Marvel Presents Echo Kingpin. Like, he's that kind of body build where he's just like a giant.
I think as Perry Mason, though, he wasn't that much of a, like, he didn't look like a condo with a necktie on at that point. I think that was later.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, so Raymond Burr, as seen in the TV show, a little less kingpinny. Okay, so yeah, maybe Jimbo does take this one. What do you think, Tara?
I mean, when I said comically gigantic breasts, I don't think you understand how comically gigantic they are. So I put a link in the chat so that you can see. These are, I mean, they're each of Jimbo's boobs in this one look are like four times the size of Jimbo's head. Jimbo is going to suffocate anybody with with these boobs. You can't even motorboat in them. You're just going to be enveloped by them.
No,
and
you'll
drown. One will ever see you again. So I think Head Crusher, although I believe Dave Head Crusher did get the advantage of the I'm pinching your face guy in that sketch. But the point of the whole thing is everyone's head is fine. Both of them are just doing their bits. Nothing actually happens to anyone's heads. So I think, you know, even if Head Crusher thinks he has won, nothing has happened. And I think he's more annoying than anything else. He's quickly dispatched. And Raymond Burr as Perry Mason versus Jimbo, I mean, Perry Mason is just going to get crushed. I don't care how big his suit and tie are. He is going into that cleavage and he's not coming out.
No match for the rack.
All right.
So Jimbo for the win for me.
Jimbo for the win. All right, here's our last match of round one.
Oh, boy.
First off, we have Nathan Firefly Fillion.
Yeah, he plays Mal, right?
Yeah.
Don't at me. But he's like the one that everybody remembers from Firefly. He does things that space Western guys do. And also, I could have picked Nathan Caleb on Buffy Fillion, but that seemed like super unfair and also weird. I don't think I realized that there would literally be the Prince of Darkness also in the mix. So I maybe have some regrets, but Nathan Fillion with a holster and leathers on, I guess. Whatever was happening on that show.
Yeah.
Doug Heffernan, the King of Queens.
We find out in one quite memorable episode that Doug's parents have been keeping a lot of truths from him over the course of his life to protect his feelings, including that the dog he thinks is still the dog from his childhood is actually Rocky V. It's not Rocky I that he had when he was in middle school. And one of the other truths they've been keeping from him is that he was actually born in Canada And Doug asks, what happens if he ever wanted to run for president? And his dad says, we just rolled the dice on that one. And, you know, Doug is not presidential material. So Doug, technically Canadian, the best kind of Canadian.
And our last entry in this Thunderdome is Max Headroom Frewer.
Well, I'm not really sure how that's going to go, but Max Headroom, cultural touchstone, hard to kill, but also probably pretty easy to unplug.
My first instinct is just to give this to Captain Mal, because I feel like he is used to fighting and getting into scrapes and getting out of scrapes with relative ease as far as this batch goes. Max Headroom is a virtual character that lives at a computer that really has no physical agency that I can remember. And Doug Heffernan, once a in-shape football player, but no longer. There's a lot of storylines in King of Queens that have him out of breath and loving to eat carbs and things of the such. And I can't really figure out a way that Max Headroom can kind of get out of his VR setup to really do any damage. So this one feels like Nathan Firefly Fillion, easy. But let's see how we go. Tara?
Yeah, I agree. You know, even Doug could kick in a monitor, especially one from 1987, where they, you know, there's a lot of depth behind the screen. One steel-toed boot, which is what he has to wear for his job, is going to dispatch Max Headroom. So goodbye to the incorporeal combatant. And yeah, Dave is right. Doug was once a very in-shape football player in high school. And, you know, he does have some physical force. He is a package delivery person. He has to lift a lot of stuff. But we certainly know from canonically from the show, he does not have excellent stamina. Whereas Mal's whole thing is, you know, being a space cowboy, and that includes fighting hand-to-hand on occasion.
In space saloons.
Exactly, in the space saloon.
My space beer.
I don't think Doug is equipped for this fight, and I think Mal takes it. Sarah.
What I just said is what I think every episode of Firefly is, by the way.
Yes.
After seeing the pilot where somebody's thrown through a computer window, basically, in the saloon, I'm like, all right, I know the show. Don't need to watch anymore. Sarah.
That's why I think that Captain Mal would become becalmed by Max Headroom long enough for Doug to come up with a dumb scheme that ends up working, which is basically to take Max Headroom's monitor, bash it over Captain Mal's head, thereby unplugging Max Headroom. Is Doug in good shape, or even, I mean, never mind great. Is he even in good shape?
He probably has big guy man strength. If you're wondering if he can pick up a television and smash over his head, I think he's there.
For sure, yes.
And also, I mean, he's a UPS driver, right?
He's an IPS there's a certain, driver,
like,
but yes.
Baseline of, right, a certain baseline of, like, tolerance for working conditions of that, physical working conditions that, you know, he'll be okay. He's not completely sedentary. He's just a football player gone to a little bit of fat because he likes to eat.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. I think he has a path to victory in this round, as I have described it. If anyone would like to come to the Doug side, feel free. Otherwise, I accept the panel's vote.
All right, that is it. We are done round one. Round two coming at you right after these messages.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Round two, match one of three. We've got Albert versus the symbiotic duo of the North American house hippo and Shelley Tambo from Northern Exposure versus Megan Draper from Mad Men. Tara. Albert, House Hippo Tambo.
Oh my God.
Makes Megan Draper.
You know, I don't think the House Hippo is going to be much of a help in this. I think large, burly adult NHL star is going to very easily defeat both a waitress, even one who lives in Alaska under tough conditions.
Well, Albert also has relatively protective footwear on.
That too.
Mm-hmm. You know, he skates, even if he's having trouble walking on the skates, the House Hippo can't really bite through a skate.
No,
it's like leather.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah, I don't think Megan or Shelley puts up much of a resistance to Albert. I think Albert takes this in a escape. Sarah?
Agree. I sadly foresee, like, here's the thing. It might not be icy in Thunderdome, but that stick still works. And yeah. Poor HH is going to the rafters. Toot de suite, I fear. And then I think it's not long for anything after that for Tambo Draper LLC, because mm-hmm. they're not wearing protective gear, and that's it. And especially, you know, if he makes it a twofer by aiming House Hippo at Draper's teeth. Mm. Ball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the helmet and pads, but that's also true. He's very well
Albert.
Protected.
Mm-hmm. Albert for the win.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's hard to argue against Albert. I will say I did get a note from the Thunderdome Regulatory Commission.
Oh.
Which is the familiars, if taken by a human, are allowed to leave when the human is killed.
Okay, great.
So good news for the House Hippo.
Hooray!
So the House Hippo gets to waddle off to have more House Hippo adventures.
So cute.
Get that peanut butter, Hippo.
Yeah, I can't really argue against it. I think he's got defense and offense, and these are two relatively, to him, I believe, weak competitors. Keep in mind, also, he is a hockey player and a Canadian hockey player, mm-hmm. so they play dirty. They're, you know, always down for a fight. I mm-hmm. mean, there have been hockey games that have started with fights. As soon as the puck drops, they settle scores from the last time they played before they actually start playing hockey. And before the clock even hits 10 seconds, there's four people in the penalty box. That kind of stuff happens in NHL hockey. So here we are. Albert moving ahead to the finals.
Albert.
All right. Our second of our three round two matches. We have Allison Hendricks from Orphan Black paired with Hobo fighting mm-hmm. William James T. Kirk Shatner.
Oh, God.
With Keither 24 Sutherland. Oh. This is a powerhouse match.
Oh, I hate it. Sarah, start us off.
I also hate it, especially since my birthday mate, William Shatner, is a toastish, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, I think he'll just look at, he'll like try to hit on Allison Hendricks. She will sick Hobo on him. Hobo will like just eat him, I think, on Allison's orders. And that's going to leave Allison Hobo versus Kiefer 24 Sutherland. Mm-hmm. And see previous round, like if anyone is going to be able to bring the fight to a stomach inside outing terrorist mofo like Jack Bauer, I can absolutely see Allison Hendricks standing there with a pair of pinking shears like, fucking try it. But then he will try it and she'll be killed. And Hobo, once again, will be running off into the outback, never to be seen again, but presumably safe from harm.
Mm-hmm.
So my vote is for Kiefer Sutherland from 24. Who's next?
I am. I'm trying to place Jack Bauer in space and then a threat with that sort of drive
mm-hmm.
versus Kirk without his sort of bridge capabilities.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen Kirk fight the Gorn. Or even Spock. Actually, Jack Bauer's a lot like the Gorn, actually. I think like, he's just sort of a killing machine. Mm-hmm. And I think Kirk defeated the Gorn. Kirk's still around. So I don't know. Maybe Kirk can pull this off. Allison Hendricks, she doesn't take any shit. She's got Hobo. I don't know what Hobo can bring to this.
That's
except being
thing.
A distraction. If she needed a distraction, sort of a flanking maneuver dog would come mm-hmm. in handy. Man, when it just comes to raw power and willingness to end a life. It's really hard to think how Jack Bauer's not going to win this one. Tara, you go. And mm-hmm. I'm going to think about my scenario a little bit more, see if I can piece that out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I think Allison probably comes the closest of anyone we've talked about to being able to defeat Kiefer/Jack Bauer. But mm-hmm. I mean, he's the thing about Allison is that she's got a strong drive to survive, but she has not been trained in wet works the way Jack Bauer has.
That's an excellent point as
well. He's been at Langley. They've taught him shit we do not want to know. Like, the probably what even makes it into the show is just the tip of the iceberg of what he is capable of. And has been, you know, put through scenarios to use. I don't think she can take him, even with or without Hobo or Pinking Shears. I think that Kiefer / Jack Bauer, he's kind of the end of the story for me. Dave, did that change your mind at all?
So I was thinking during my, you know, contemplative period there about Kirk when he fought the Gorn, because I think the Gorn shares a lot of traits with Jack Bauer insofar that he's a relentless killing machine.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps that is a signifier that Kirk could possibly take it. But that was an unfair, in the end, fight, because what Kirk was able to do was manufacture his own weapon. He had like created a makeshift weapon and used like diamonds or quartz or something like that in the rocks they were fighting amongst to kill the Gorn. And here in the Thunderdome, you only got what's in the Thunderdome. They are both equally matched. There is no, the Gorn doesn't have the sense to create a weapon itself. And could be overpowered. So I think that Kiefer, Jack Bauer, Sutherland will overpower Kirk, even though Kirk has a lot of hand-to-hand experience. Even if Allison Hendricks could train Hobo to go against his nature and bite Jack Bauer, Jack Bauer has been through a lot of torture himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like some dog bites aren't going to faze him enough in order for Allison to be able to overpower him. So I think I agree with everybody that Kiefer Sutherland is moving on to the finals.
Yeah.
Here's our last match of round two, the Start the Car Lady versus Jimbo versus Nathan Firefly Fillion. And I am first here. So we got the retail Viking versus the large breasted Jimbo versus the spaceship captain.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Look.
He's really searching his soul.
Well, Car Lady's got the drive. Jimbo's got the hardware. And Fillion's got the experience.
Yeah.
Start the Car Lady, retail Viking. You know, I didn't think she was going to make it this far. I can't really see a path for her to really combat the things the other two are bringing. Tara, please proceed. I got to think about this for a moment.
I mean, Jimbo's got the hardware. Jimbo's got the software. Let's be real, Dave. The boobs are large. And
the resort wear and the evening wear. All the wares.
You know, the Start the Car Lady, as I said in the last round, has a criminal mind, is definitely motivated. But I don't know if anyone who has ever worked for IKEA is as ruthless as a pack of drag queens, which is what Jimbo has been contending with in various iterations of the RuPaul's Drag Race universe. In addition to Canada's Drag Race, as I said, and All Stars also was on UK versus the World. This is not Jimbo's first rodeo. Jimbo is a competitor, but I don't think you can discount the space cowboyness. That's their whole thing. Traveling the universe, the literal universe, not just the drag race universe, killing people, getting in your ship, going about your business. I think,
as we learned in the Firefly theme, they did take that away from him here in the Thunderdome. He is no longer left to roam free across the span of the universe. He is in a very small geodesic dome fighting for his life.
Yeah. Okay.
So that might play
true.
Into his mental game.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Jimbo's also really tough, really tall, rather, without heels on, even. So I think maybe Jimbo does take this round.
Sarah?
I think Jimbo does take this round. I think that Captain Mal is tough, but I think that Captain Mal maybe is a little more used to having Jane back his ass up.
Yeah.
Jimbo is just a formidably sized human in and out of giant boob drag.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Start the Car Lady, respect for your journey, but you had a weak draw and you're not in the conversation with this. Someone's going to take one of those IKEA bags and just throttle you with it. And then it's down to Jimbo and Captain Mal. And I don't know for sure, but I just get the sense that what is going to make the difference is a certain sang-froid that Captain Mal doesn't have and Jimbo has more of. I could be wrong about that, but I'm voting Jimbo.
Yeah, I can see that too. So the final is set.
Oh my God.
Fucking wild.
Your Canada Thunderdome finalists are from the Canadian Tire Aspirational Hockey Journey ad, Albert. From 24 and Donald Sutherland comes Keither 24 Sutherland, the Jack Bauer version of Keither Sutherland.
Yep.
And Jimbo from Drag Race All-Stars. Oh, boy. This is a good final. Tara, first thoughts?
You know,
I'm so glad I don't have to go first, by the way. Thank you, Tara.
I would love to give it to Jimbo, but unfortunately, you know, we said at the beginning, it's lucky for us that Wolverine and Deadpool aren't in this because they can't be killed. I kind of feel like that about Kiefer Sutherland / Jack Bauer. I don't know if anyone on this list, including the literal devil, could take Kiefer down. Jack Bauer just, like, does not give a fuck, has no respect for human life, has no mercy.
You're talking about hockey players, too.
I realize that. I mean, I think that Kiefer is going to, like, crack that helmet open like a coconut.
Uh-huh.
He's going to just tear into that skull, and then he's going to rip Jimbo's fake boobs off him and use that to suffocate Albert. I mean, I think that everything in Thunderdome is a weapon to Kiefer. Everything everywhere is a weapon to him. And he's going to just use the parts of his opponents to kill them. And he is going to come out ahead absolutely coated in blood. I think Kiefer can't be stopped.
Okay, so here's a scenario, I think, in which Kiefer can be challenged.
Okay.
So
I'd love to hear it.
Jack Bauer, you know, jackety, leather jackety kind of dude.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey players, when they like to fight, if they really want to, like, punish the other person, the move is to pull the jersey over their head.
Oh, that, yes, mm-hmm. Sure.
Sort of rendering them at, like, 1/5 capacity as far as a brawl goes.
Right.
So, is Albert the kind of player that could immediately go for that, right? Keep in mind, he also has skates on, too. So, he's got stomping on foot power.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody else has. He also has padding. That does make him slower, but I don't think this is a fight of wily speed. I don't think Jack Bauer is more of a torture tank than
he is. Yeah, he's methodical.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let's just, even if Jack Bauer got sort of to Albert and they didn't have this fight, and Keith or Sutherland, let's just say, takes the jersey off Albert and starts to put the jersey down his throat to rip out his stomach lining.
Oh, God.
Albert has those skates. Like, he is now basically, like, in the near Bauer's legs and bowels and everything like that. So I think there's an opportunity there for Albert. I don't want to discount too much how much of a boxer hockey players are, or just like a brawler that hockey players are.
Sure.
Especially back then, like, hockey's tried to clean up their act a bit. They always fail because that's not what people want out of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
People want to see blood on the ice a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, certainly they were delivering. 70s, the 80s, hockey players like Tiger Williams, they were just goons. They went out there to fight. That's what they did. So even though we see Albert as a sweet child at the beginning of that ad, and we're all supposed to be happy that he grew up and got great and got to the big leagues, he still could be one giant brawling asshole in that future.
Mm.
Putting that in there. Sarah, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I feel like Tara is probably correct that Kiefer can't be stopped. Kiefer Bauer can't be stopped. But I think it's also not impossible that Jimbo and Albert could collaborate. And because they're both wearing a fair amount of padding as well. Like, Kiefer has superior murderacious skills. But Kiefer is also just wearing, like, civilian clothes. Albert has a bunch of hockey pads on and a helmet, which is, like, one extra step before the towel stomach lining the end of days.
Right.
And Jimbo has the giant boobs, presumably some binding. Also has heels as weapons. You got skates as weapons. You got a stick. So if Albert and Jimbo can collaborate, Albert gets behind Kiefer and throttles him with his stick, and then Jimbo can bury some pertinent footwear in Kiefer's eye and kill him. Then it's down to Albert and Jimbo. And I think that probably Jimbo wins that, depending on Jimbo's boobs have not been like cut to ribbons by other combat. But this is a lot of ifs. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of them will happen. I think Kiefer will be one step ahead, 5D chess, and he'll find a way to hold them both by the head and turn all their like fighting and flailing against each other, and then he will prevail. And coated with blood, I think, is absolutely happening, no matter who wins. But I think it's Kiefer.
All right, let's put this to the vote. Tara, your vote is for?
It's for Kiefer, unfortunately.
Sarah D. Bunting?
I also must vote for extra legal means, Kiefer 24 Sutherland.
All right. I am putting my final vote in for Albert, but 2-1 means that here in Canada Thunderdome, 27 Canadian television figures entered. One by one, they were whittled down. We lost many. A couple escaped to live adventures a new day. But at the end of it all, standing on top of all the bodies of all the poor Canadians, it is Kiefer 24 Sutherland.